Osiris.
Hey, everybody. This is the live show.
Everybody.
Sometimes when you do a live show, things don't go exactly as planned. And that's what happened today. That's why we're a couple minutes late. But those of you who are listening to this later, you'll have no idea. You'll have no idea that we were a couple minutes late because we're always right on time. That's what's cool about podcasts. You know, Brian?
It's, you know, the fun thing about, like, you go to a concert, you like feel all that anxiety and like all that tension before the band walks out on stage. And you're like, what the hell? It's showtime. They should be here. What is going on? I paid for a ticket for a show that starts at 8 o'clock and it's 8:22. What is happening?
What's happening?
And then you get the bootleg
and
you're like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm just going to press play. And I don't know any of that stress. I just want to hear the music.
You know, it's interesting. This is a good show to discuss this because, you know, there was like there's a lot of FOMO when you miss a good show, right? It's like, I wish I had been at that show. But sometimes it's actually just easier to like stream at home or listen to or watch later. there's a lot of stress that goes into live music, you know? We put it on ourselves.
It's actually a really like prescient topic right now because, I've just been like telling people that the Saturday night Trey sit-in with Goose was one of the greatest musical moments I've ever been a part of. And the follow-up question is always, oh, you were there? I'm like, no, but I watched it. I felt it. Like I was there in spirit.
There.
I'm just going to cling to that.
You were there. Exactly. Well, thank you guys for joining us. This is the live show. We are going to get into a really cool Dave Matthews show. This is a good one. And you know, we got a lot of different stuff happening here, Brian. But before we get into it, how are you doing?
I'm great, man. I took the dogs up to this like open space park where I can see Boulder. You can basically see where like Dave Matthews plays when they come through here, and they play Folsom Field. Really nice morning up here, listening to the Seek Up into Linus and Lucy over and over and over again. It's been kind of in my head spinning the last 12 to 14 hours. How are you doing though?
I'm good. Another Linus and Lucy, 2 of 10.
2 of 10. It's amazing.
I know
the first three volumes.
And I will tell you about Live Tracks 3. The show flow is on point.
This show flow is, and we'll talk about this because like as we get into the world of Dave Matthews, I'm starting to understand the lingo. I'm starting to understand how they judge these sort of shows. And looking at this set list, I'm like, wow, this is like looking at the show flow. This is incredible stuff.
Before we get into it, we got a comment from Jim. Hi, Jim. Trey sat in with Billy Strings last night in New York City. Have you listened to that yet? Do you have thoughts?
Yeah, we were sharing texts in the HF Pod group thread. When this started, I had about 3 people send me the link and I threw it on. It sounded so good. It was like, it was very different from the sit-in on Saturday, but it was amazing to hear how he listened to yet another young artist at this point in time in their career and really just like let that artist shine and complimented him in such a way. It was fascinating to listen to. What were your thoughts?
Well, I haven't actually listened to it yet.
You'll be enjoying that later today.
I will.
This is the beauty of bootlegs. You can listen to this later.
I've been listening to Dave Matthews every moment of my waking life. I've been listening to Dave Matthews, although we did listen to some other music last night. And I'm here at the beach with my family. It's great. We had our neighbors from home who are around here. They were here last night. We watched the sunset on the patio. So, you know, I had a good evening and I'm ready to rock. We should remind people. So we're going to do this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So after today, I know people are going to have to find something to do tomorrow at noon and in the next several days, but we'll be back on Tuesday, the 5th. And we're going to do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. We've had several people reach out and talk to us, including someone who's watching now, and say like, this particular Dave Matthews show is really important to me and I'd love to be a guest, or, you know, I love Dave Matthews in general and I'd love to be a guest. So we're going to start bringing guests on probably as early as next week. And then we're going to keep, powering through, and then we're going to, you know, see where we go. Cause there's so many artists, so many live shows, and there's so much to talk about. So I'm excited about this, Brian, and thanks for joining me on this experimental journey.
I'm right there with you for any experimental journey. I'm here for you. And, this show in particular, reaching this and reaching, August 2000 Dave Matthews Band, era was a really cool moment to get to, especially after kind of setting the table with this, that fascinating 12/8/98, listen, dipping into 2004, an era that I've never really spent much time in. And then going back to 2000, which is like right in the middle of when I was listening to a ton of Dave Matthews.
So do you want to tell where was Dave, where was the band at this time, and what was this tour like? And maybe if you want to talk a little bit about the venue, we know this venue as live music fans, but what do you want to tell the people?
Yeah, kind of setting the table here. Obviously the Meadows Music Theater in Hartford. I've been there. I went there for the 2010 Fish Run, and it's like, have you ever been to this venue?
Yeah, 2010. I was there too.
Were you really?
Yeah, I guess it was just before we knew each other. I was there in
2010.
They played there in 2009 also.
They played their 2009. They did a great 2009 show.
When I lived in Boston, I saw every Fish Hartford show, and I think maybe that was only two or three. But yeah, it's a weird, it's like in a weird part of town. It's sort of like strange, but they like bands, I think, like playing there.
Yeah, it's as standard of amphitheater as you could get. It's like Camden, it's like Great Woods. There's really nothing special about it, but I loved it. The lawn was really big, spacious, lush. The pavilion, by all accounts, is like a great. There's a great sound in there. I really enjoyed the venue. Famously, Neil Young recorded much of his 1997 live album Year of the Horse there, which is one of my absolute favorite Neil Young live releases. Maybe something to cover in the near future. Who knows? We'll see. Fish played 8/14/09, an excellent show there. And Dave Chappelle had a contentious live set there where he called on North Korea to bomb the venue in 2013. Which is the only concert entry on Wikipedia about the Meadows Music Theater, which is really funny. Now known today as the Xfinity Theater, it's the only thing that I was trying to figure out. You know, any sort of background info about the theater last night, and that's the only thing that's listed on Wikipedia. It's pretty funny.
Amazing.
You know, for the band. This is such an interesting era. And for me, this was when I was really like at my peak of listening to this band. As I said in the first episode, Before These Crowded Streets was really the album that like hooked me. That's still my favorite Dave Matthews album. Coming out of that, there's a ton of songs that are written. I mean, this show has six songs that would appear on the Lily White Sessions. All of these songs would eventually end up on the 2002 release Busted Stuff. And a lot of these songs are just played like hard throughout this summer. Gray Street, for example, is played 46 times. Bartender is played 35 times. And from all accounts, I remember hearing at the time, since then, I know my impressions of it, is that this is a songwriting batch that was incredibly well received. We talked about this in yesterday's episode, that like the 2004 batch of songs seemed to be really well received. Those songs did not end up on Stand Up, similar to these songs not ending up on Every Day, which would come out about 6-7 months later. So it's a lot of creativity at this time. They sound a little bit tighter to me than they sounded in that December 98 run. The lyrics edge in kind of this really dark territory. I think the biggest thing I found from like the experimental segments, I think Bartender kind of sums up the best experimentation at this point in time. It's this kind of wall of sound where Dave is just like, he's playing this repeated rhythm over and over again and just letting Leroy, letting Butch, you know, kind of really showcase their own skills at this point.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about the band at this era, and what were your impressions of them then?
Just based on this release, and I guess before I do that, I have to, you made some good notes about pop culture, and I just want to say, Brian made a note that August 2000 was a big month for weddings. Dave Matthews and Jennifer Ashley Harper got married on August 10th. Will Ferrell got married on August 12th. And Newt Gingrich married a congressional aide 23 years younger than him on August 18th. So yeah, I like those tidbits. Yeah, we can talk about it in terms of the show, but I feel like they were really tight, like you said, really in sync in a way that like the 2004 show we talked about yesterday, you know, the Santana sit-in was really cool and there were some cool moments, but this just felt like there was like an hour of music before they even took a breather, you know? Similar, actually, a lot of the similar stuff that we've heard in the first two releases, but that first, I guess, six songs are just, it's just like one long jam, which is so different from what I'm used to hearing from them, and from I think what we heard in the first couple. This is the end of August, right? 2000. Mm-hmm. They had been on tour, I think, for a while, right? It's like it was like the 36th show of the summer 2000 tour, which is a lot of shows.
Yeah, and they'd taken a slight break, I'm guessing, for Dave's wedding. They finished up at the Gorge in early August, took a break until August 19th, I believe it is, and they did like a Midwestern run starting in Alpine Valley and leading up to this three-night run here in Hartford, which is cool to think, like, you know, when I think of Dave Matthews much in the same way that when I think of Phish, I think about the Northeast, the East Coast really being their home. And at this point in time, you could play a three-night run in Hartford and just sell out every single night. And it's at a point in their career where, you know, they've got the bank of songs from the recently Remember Two Things era, Under the Table and Dreaming and Crash. And then obviously The Streets and this new batch of songs here from what would ultimately become the Lily White Sessions. You just have a band that is so filled with songs to play on a nightly basis that three nights is not going to like drain them of any creativity. It's a cool era for them in that sense.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot happening in this show. Well, we should just dive into it, but there's the Dancing Nancys. It's like, it's an intense song, an opener. It's a great opener, but it's a kind of an intense song, you know, like there's again, like as with all these shows, there's like a very much an easing into it. But Stefan's bass in that opener, I just feel like he's like so much more prominent, or maybe I was just listening for it differently than the other two. But there's a little jam in the middle there that's just great. And I think it's, to me, like Stefan, like there's these that hour of the six songs, he's just all over it. And the Dancing Nancys and Seek Up are great, great combo to open. And you can just feel that it's like, I don't know, maybe it's this tour, maybe it goes up and down. I haven't looked at the show flow for the whole tour, but it just feels like they're like from out of the gate, they're kind of locked in and ready to rock.
Yeah, I found myself last night watching, there's a full show video of their Shoreline show from August 2nd, as well as their Virginia Beach show from, I'm blanking on the date of it, but it was right around the time of this show. And I was going back and forth between the two. And one thing that was really interesting to me in both of those shows, which does not happen in this show, is Satellite is played within like the first three or four songs. And one thing I've noticed looking at the show flow is every time Satellite is played, it just, the show flow drops. It like breaks through the wall and like falls to earth. And watching the shows, I got myself thinking about like, is Satellite Dave Matthews Creep, but Dave Matthews just like played like Radiohead stopped playing Creep and yeah. Dave Matthews played Satellite. Like I looked at it, it's like 1,030 times that they've played Satellite in their entire career. Like if you look at the stats, it's just like every year has like 25, 30 performances of it. And it's kind of notable in this set that they just avoid that. Like there's no Satellite, there's no Crash. In their place, there's these moody dark songs that allow for experimentation. And you said it really well. Right out the gates, we have like 45 minutes of pretty fluid flowing music. You get an elongated jam off of Dancing Nancy's. You get a really deep jam in Seek Up, which goes into the first line of St. Lucy since August 8th, 1999, just over a year, which then fades perfectly into the, you know, suite of Pantala Nagapampa and Rapunzel.
Yeah.
And from there, we're like, now we take a break at that point in time.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I'll Back You Up is, I mean, first of all, it's just a, it's like, it's a perfect, perfect song.
Yeah.
But just the placement is just like the perfect breather, you know? And like, it was, I thought that was a really, cool choice and a good, and that's just such a great song. I remember like, you know, Remember Two Things. I got Remember Two Things after I got after I got Under the Table and Dreaming. So like, you know, hearing I'll Back You Up and Christmas Song and, you know, Minarets and like that, I don't know. There was something about that album that like really kind of like hit me more than the other, you know, studios. I'm not sure why, but that's like that song in particular is pretty amazing.
It's an interesting thought. And I think about it like I was thinking about this yesterday because I was listening a little bit to Busted Stuff in comparison to these songs. Because I, like the only way to listen to the Lily White Sessions, there's actually two ways. We should give a shout out to one person, one of which you have to listen on the YouTube app. There's a playlist set up for it. There's no like way to officially stream the Lily White Sessions in their original format, which is really kind of annoying because that album absolutely rules. And I'd love to hear like that copy of it. But huge shout out to Riley Walker, one of my favorite singer-songwriters, who is a proud longtime Dave Matthews fan as well. And he recorded the Lily White Sessions and released it as a full album in 2018, after which he got to hang out and party with Dave Matthews, which he said was a accomplishment of his entire life. It was a long-term goal. And I highly recommend people seeking that out. But to my point and to what you're saying, one of the things I think works so well in Remember Two Things is what works so well in the Lily White Sessions and works so well in this live setting. There's something about a rough around the edges nature to Dave Matthews' performances that just like complements them. And I find some of the songs that were on Remember Two Things when they were later put on Under the Table and Dreaming, they're a little bit too smooth around the edges. Same thing happened with Busted Stuff. When that album came out, all these great songs were suddenly like tightened up and polished in the studio. They just don't sound as like fresh and organic as you get in the live setting or on Lily White Sessions.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because these live performances, I think it's a great, I mean, I just think it's like such an organic show, you know?
And yeah,
a lot of those albums, especially I guess Crash and Under the Table and Dreaming are like very much, very tightly produced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Busted Stuff came out in 2002, right? And that was a Record Plant, famous for lots of albums, but most famous to me for Rumors.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's gone now, right? That the Sausalito one is no longer a recording studio. But anyway, sorry, that was right. A diversion. Okay, so the I'll Back You Up. I mean, perfect kind of break and the first break in this show at all. I mean, you know, incredible. And then you get into like a couple, I guess there's like a mix of kind of old songs and new songs, but a bunch of songs that I wasn't super familiar with. But again, it didn't feel like they were like going through and playing songs. It was like, it felt like a really cohesive show. What were your, yeah, some of your like this sort of middle of the show highlights?
I mean, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I'm never hitting, like as the set list lists it, like from I'll Back You Up through JTR, I'm not hitting the skip button at one point. This show felt really tailor-made for what I want to hear and what I'm really curious about hearing in this series. It's a lot of rarities. You get deep cuts. I'll back you up. This played. It's the fourth of six performances of the tour. It's the eighth of eight recentlies and the sixth of seven versions of the Maker. Daniel Lenoir's song that Dave Matthews actually just played with Phish in Mexico for the first time in 20 some years. They're almost 30 years back in February. Those songs, like older rare songs, I really dig. But then you get six brand new songs that have been played a ton throughout the tour, but at that point in time had not been put on a record. A lot of people were hearing them for the first time. I remember spending a ton of time on the boards that summer. I was really getting into the band around that time. And there was just this collective energy of like, wow, they have this base of excellent songs from their previous three, four studio records, depending on what you count, Remember Two Things as. And now they have this new batch of songs that like totally refines these and adds to them and like naturally fits in the set list. And if you look at a lot of set lists around this era, you know, they're dropping these songs in, they're getting a ton of rotations, but to get six new songs basically in a row, it blows my mind. Busted Stuff has like a cool little jam fade out. Raven is a really great deep cut from that era. Gray Street, I think, is like one of the earworms that Dave has written throughout his career. It's just got, I go back to that song constantly thematically. It really is, it's endearing and like, it sounds anthemic. You get Say Goodbye, which is relatively rare off the Crash record. And then this outstanding version of Bartender. And outstanding is kind of like, it's a relative term. Every version of Bartender that I've heard is excellent. And I'd be curious to know what a bad version of Bartender sounds like, because it's just one of those songs that like the band seems to own live. But what were your thoughts about this segment of the show?
Yeah, I think that I agree with everything you said. I mean, I think the Raven and the Maker, Gray Street, I mean, Grace is gone into Say Goodbye is like, wow, that's a devastating kind of moment. I mean, I've heard Grace is Gone, you know, hundreds of times, but really like listening to the lyrics again for the first time in a while, I was like, wow, this song is like, I mean, it's a great song, but it's so sad and so intense, but we've all been there, you know? And the kind of like the feeling of it, and then into Say Goodbye, you're like really, that's a little bit of a tough combo emotionally. But that's what's cool about these shows. Like, there's a lot of emotional moments in a Dave Matthews show, you know. I think the bands that I like to go see, you know, it's rare, you know. Like, it happens at Phish once in a while, a ballad or a specific song that has meaning to me, but I feel like there's like many of these per show at every Dave Matthews show. And that's probably part of why it's been such a devoted fan base for so long.
Yeah, I kind of think about that aspect in the sense that, like, you know, they play I'll Back You Up coming out of this first, like, Dancing Nancy's, Seek Up, Linus and Lucy, Through Rapunzel. I'll Back You Up is the, you know, kind of token ballad here. And that's a really emotional song. And that is, I think, the first song that they actually ever learned together as a band. You get that, you get Grace Is Gone. Like, there's a freedom that Dave Matthews has with being able to be as emotional and as direct and as earnest and sincere that some other bands in the genre don't necessarily get away with as much. And I think it's something that's really appealing about their shows. I think it's also interesting, like, you know, your point about how sad Grace Is Gone is. It's an interesting point to dive into for this era, because by all accounts, this was a really difficult time period for Dave himself. And part of the reason why Every Day emerged 6 months later was he'd kind of gotten to a point where, like, he didn't think he could put these songs out on record. He thought they were too sad. He thought they were too honest, that they were too direct about challenges and struggles he was going through. And at some point within the next couple of months, he goes into a songwriting session and comes out with like 12 new songs altogether. And they're vastly different from what we hear here on this tour, none of the songs that would make it to Every Day are played or even hinted at this point in time. It's really wild, like how within 6 months the perception around this band is going to change dramatically because this whole new album is going to come out that nobody has even considered. Everyone's preparing for these songs to be the next album. Nobody's preparing for a whole new batch of songs to come in that really sound nothing like this. It's kind of wild at this point in time.
Yeah, and it's you know, we looked at this 2004 show yesterday.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff was not, I mean, I know it was just one show, but it seems like some of it had gone back to like more of the classics a few years later. Like some of these songs, I don't know if that is how it went over the course of those, you know, 4 years, but it seems like that show we talked about yesterday was a little bit more like a greatest hits show. And that might've just been an oddity on the tour, but these are cool songs that I think, you know, all are played really well. But like we talked about earlier, I mean, this whole show, they're just so, they're so locked in. And I feel like the vibes are great. Like the playing is great. And besides Butch, you know, there's no guests. It's just like a straightforward show, but it's really more focused on like the flow and the feel than it is, you know, just playing a bunch of songs.
I agree with that. And I think like, that's what makes this middle section from I'll Back You Up through JTR so interesting to me, is that they're showcasing all of these new songs, but they show this kind of effortless flow and this effortless precision. They all sound like songs, you know, for the most part, a lot of these songs, Busted Stuff, they've played 10 times. Raven, they've played 7 times. Gray Street, 33. Grace Is Gone, 23. Bartender, 26. Like these are songs that have gotten a ton of practice on the road. It's one of the things that differentiates Dave Matthews Band from a lot of other bands in the jam band world, is repeats aren't necessarily looked down on, hard rotation aren't necessarily looked down upon. So you have a lot of these songs that have been road tested in a really heavy way. And by this point in the tour, they know kind of where they fit. They know where they flow. And you can mix a Say Goodbye, a relative rarity, in between Grace Is Gone and Bartender. You can play Bartender, JTR, and then go into Ants Marching as your big set closer. So there's flow to this set that I think was slightly missing yesterday, and I think is really reflected in like the show flow guide on the Ants Marching blog has one song that got a 0.5 overall rating from attended listeners. Everything else is at that one, you know, level. It's at a really strong level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really just, and I agree with that rating, you know. It was a little shaky there for a second, but you're back. I was just looking at the next show, the next day at SPAC, and the show flow is not, you know, there's a lot of dips. It's interesting that like one thing that's probably a little bit of a misperception of Dave Matthews fans is that like they go to hear the hits, you know, because some of the show flow stuff where it dips are like some of the most popular songs.
Right.
Like in the next night, like What Would You Say and Crash are the biggest dips in the show, which I would think like those would be huge, huge crowd favorites.
It's wild to think about like this band that has been so successful on a popular cultural standpoint that also toes the line between experimentation and between embracing, you know, a lot of rarities and embracing songwriting development. To be a fan of this band and to see this band multiple times, like we do this on the Fish side of things a lot, but these are songs that are never like hit singles. Like if you're a Fish fan and you've seen over 50 shows, you've seen a lot of character zeros, but like nobody outside of the Fish community could give two shits about Character Zero. Like it's not a song that is like, you know, become a part of the collective mindset. Whereas like Crash Into Me is a song that even if you've never seen Dave Matthews, even if you've never bought a Dave Matthews record, you know that song. And there's this really interesting kind of dynamic, it seems, within the community between almost pushing away some of these more popular songs in favor of the rarities. And again, like I've got to imagine for the band at this time, knowing that within 6 months, they're going to put out a very pop focused record and really make a push of like, hey, like they're on the cover of Rolling Stone. It's the third episode I've done that. Dave famously picks up an electric guitar for the, within that album, which is like this huge kind of watershed moment within the Dave Matthews fan base. I remember there was a lot of anger around him playing an electric guitar on stage. There's this like push within 6 months to have some sort of a pop relevancy. But you look back 6 months prior to this summer, to late August, and it kind of seems like the band is in this very special place with their fan base and creatively, you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, that I wonder if they had just kind of kept their heads down and played this type of music going forward, they're, you know, some of the pitfalls, some of the challenges that they would have faced over the next 6 to 8 years may not have appeared as dramatically. I don't know. It's a lot of speculation, but it's just interesting for me to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. We haven't said this in the first three episodes, but for those of you who like interviews with Dave, we just did a re-release of the first episode of Eric Krasno's podcast called Eric Krasno Plus One, where he interviews Dave Matthews. And you can go to osirispod.com and check out Eric Krasno Plus One. It's the most recent episode because we just re-released it. But he has a long conversation with Dave about history of the band and music. I mean, it's a really fascinating interview. So I wanted to plug that real quick.
It's a great one.
So this show closes with Ants Marching and then Encore, The Stone, and Drive In, Drive Out. Should we get into our awards? Are you ready?
Yeah. I want to ask you really quick though. We talked yesterday about The Stone. Did you go back and give it like a deeper listen? And if so, like what was your takeaway?
Yeah, it's growing on me for sure. And I know that there's going to be future live tracks that have more versions. So I think it was so much of listening to music, as you know, is like where you are in the moment, you know, and sometimes the show just hits you at the right time or a song. So I like this encore combo. One thing that's interesting about these shows is like, I'm used to most of the bands I see, for better or worse, play two set shows, you know, and like the one long set thing is sort of like, by the end, it feels like it's been going on forever, but at the same time, it's like shorter than a two set show. And I just think that's interesting, you know, like the set break, it's probably about as long as a two set show, right? It's not like they're playing for, you know, 45 minutes, but it's such a long period of time with where the flow has to matter and the, you know, all that. I don't know. That was something that I just.
No, it's wild because I think about it and we, you know, a lot of bands don't adhere to the two set model, and it's part of what makes this show so fascinating to me is that there's like a decision either in like preset list planning or on stage in the moment, regardless which it is, like there's a decision at some point to diverge from these expected big songs and dive fully into unreleased material and rare material. And that segment isn't really possible in the two set model. You have to kind of dedicate yourself to that approach. Either we've seen Phish do this where they play like a bust out heavy set one. And like the whole first set is like all kind of bust outs and rare songs. Like Dave gives you these suites of openings that we get here in like the first 35, 40 minutes, where you get a lot of experimentation, but like not really in rare songs. And then you move into this segment that, you know, in a two set model, they would have played probably like three or four additional songs, taken a break, come back. It's a whole new experience. But they divert into these rare songs and you get this whole segment of music that would bridge kind of what would be the end of set one into set two. That's cool. It's a different way to approach a concert, and I'm enjoying it. about it, but I know what you mean.
And I think for those of you who are listening or watching, let us know, especially people who've seen a lot of Dave Matthews, just like, I'd love to hear it. Maybe some of our guests we'll have on next week and the following week can tell us about this difference. Cause I know a lot of those people see two set shows from other bands. I'm just curious how it, I mean, I guess in pop music generally, like the long one set is pretty common.
Pretty standard.
But you know, in our weird jam band world, it's not, I guess it's the Grateful Dead's fault.
I blame everything on the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Chris Corallo just made this comment. Thanks for watching and for making this comment.
Yeah.
He just said, I think hardcore fans like the hits, but not nearly as much as other songs. A handful of hits are expected at every show. It's fine, but not why people go to show after show. So that's cool. I think that's, you have to be ready if you're going to go see, and I know Dave who's watching has gone to two Dave Matthews shows this week. And I haven't looked at the set list, but I assume that you go into those expecting a repeat or two, but then like some of the stuff that you get in terms of rarities or what is it called? It's not called a bust out.
Say that again.
Liberation.
Yes. It's a liberation.
Which is awesome.
I should note, and I'm so sorry, I'm blanking on the Twitter handle, but we're going to repost this on Osiris. There's a guy who's been following the show since we started on Tuesday and responding to our comments and adding further context. And one of the things he said yesterday based on that discussion was that part of the reason why they call it liberation and they count the days rather than the shows is that Dave Matthews has never had the kind of hiatuses or the breaks that Phish has had. They've played throughout. So it's not as much of like a focus on, you know, if you were to say that Phish played the first Colonel Forbin's on 8/14/2009 in 3,000, 5,000 days, whatever it was between 2000 and 2009, it would kind of sound ridiculous, you know, so you say the shows, but for Dave Matthews, they've played pretty consistently over the last 30 years. There were a couple small breaks in there, but that was the reason for it, which I found interesting to think about, because that's another thing that we aren't really used to is this idea of they've played through challenges and they've gone back on the road, even after losing members and bringing on new members. And that's a very different aspect of a band's career than what we're typically used to in the Phish world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we need to get into our awards. And Dave just mentioned in 2014, they started doing two sets, the first being acoustic, the second full band electric, which cool. I think that's a cool model. All right, Brian, let's do it.
We're going to do it. The Live Show Awards are presented to you by Cash or Trade. Our friends over at Cash or Trade asked members which Dave Matthews tickets were the hardest to get this summer, and the answer was a resounding SPAC. It's always hard to get tickets to SPAC because you have to sit one place. You can sit up above in the pavilion. It's really awesome. It like shakes. It moves up and down whenever something's happening on stage. But you got to be inside the pavilion. Cash or Trade has given away two pavilion tickets to DMB at SPAC to one lucky winner. You can enter for a chance to win right here on the screen, cashortrade.org/grateful giveaway. Again, that's cashortrade.org/grateful giveaway for a chance to win two pavilion tickets to Dave Matthews Band at SPAC. And once again, we are coming with the same three awards. I think we're going to switch this up for next week, bring a bit of freshness to this.
Yeah.
But RJ, I'm really curious with this show, a show with excellent flow. What was your bathroom break today?
Well, you know, I have to take a bathroom break. It's just not possible not to. I think it probably would have been during Busted Stuff because that whole hour long segment, you know, was like one long kind of jam. And then I'll back you up. I would have been like a puddle on the floor. And then I think I would have just had to like go get a beer and like re-engage. Cause it is kind of like that's like a set, you know, to me. And then they sort of start in this different direction after that. So I think that's probably when I would have taken a break.
I'm suffering through this show. I'm not taking a break. I'm just letting it all, I'm dealing with it after the show. I'm going to be probably fairly miserable by the time they start ants marching and be like, man, you should have, like, they're about to go on for the encore. Like, you should have taken care of business. But like, I don't know when to stop in this concert. I was listening to it. I sent this to a couple of my buddies and I was just like, you have to listen to this whole show. I don't know where to stop. I know what you mean. Like, after you get past that hour, you're like, man, I need to take a break at this point in time. I have no bathroom break. This is, and I'm going to award this show the no bathroom break show. And we'll see if we have more of these to come. But I don't know where to stop.
All right. Well, you know, you can hold down the spot while I take a quick break. I'll grab you a water or, you know, whatever else you need.
I'm curious really quickly. Do you, when you go take a bathroom break at a show or go take a beer, go get a beer, do you feel like you're potentially missing something if something big happens? Or are you of the mindset that like, I can hear it, I'm in the venue, I'm experiencing it? Where do you fall on that?
The latter, for sure. I mean, actually, sometimes I'll go to get a beer or and, you know, a water and use the bathroom when I know that it's like the beginning of a long jam.
Totally.
Like, I'll go to the beginning of like a, you know, not Tweezer, definitely not a Tweezer, but like something where I know it's going to be 10, 15 minutes and I can make it back for like the peak, maybe Antelope, you know, maybe, and maybe like in the Dave Matthews world, maybe the beginning of a number 41, you know, cause I know it's going to like stretch out a little bit. So that's my approach.
It's a good approach. I admire it. I don't have it myself, but I admire it.
Thank you. What do you think about the MVP here?
I'm going with Dave. I think ultimately the biggest draw for me of this show, like there's good improvisation at the start of it and there's good improvisation in Say Goodbye and in Bartender. But ultimately the draw for me of this show is the songs and, mm-hmm. and the fact that he had this batch of songs that still to this day blows me away. Every time I listen to Lily White Sessions, I'm shocked. And the fact that that is the feature of this overall show really hits me. What about you?
Yeah, I think I would agree. I mean, I know I said Dave yesterday, so I'm being a little bit of a broken record here.
But, I mean, it is his band. So,
it's his band. But also, like, I also just give him the credit for, like, the flow and the construction of the set list and the fact that it's, like, the perfectly placed I'll Back You Up is just really made the show for me. And there's a lot of great singing and a lot of great interpretations of these songs. So I'm going with Dave also.
I think his playing also, like at the end of Dancing Nancy's in Bartender, it's really, really strong. Like he's just got a command of his guitar right now. And he's listening a ton to Carter. He's listening a ton to LaRoy. And like, he's listening a ton to Stefan. Like he's playing in a manner that allows his bandmates to really shine while also like, if you're listening closely, you can hear his guitar, just like it's consistent, but it's aggressive. It's creative without like dominating too much. There's just a lot going on there.
Yeah. All right. Last one. What is your jam?
It's got to be Seek Up into mm-hmm. Linus and Lucy, that whole segment. We talked about this, like Seek Up it's the perfect opener, but I'll take it at any point in the show. And to have it come after a 10-minute Dancing Nancy's is just, it's a great spot for it. It keeps the kind of mystery and the energy of the show going. And it really builds into a cool closing jam that segues nicely into this liberation of Linus and Lucy. What about you? What was your jam?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I can't think of anything else. It's just, it's great. The bass playing is great. It's a really pretty amazing little piece of music. So I'm with you on that. But we will continue to, you know, we'll continue to mix it up, guys. We're not going to agree every time. In fact, tomorrow, next time we'll probably get in a big argument, just so you guys know.
I'm just thinking like we're in a really, like we've got a good hang on this in this 827 show. Like we go in there, we get some surprise openers, we get Seek Up, we get a cool jam. After I'll Back You Up, you go, you get us refreshments, you come back with like a hot pretzel, a water, you know, we hang out for this really cool rarity segment of the show. And then the band closes things out with the Stone and Drive In, Drive Out. We just watch Carter Beauford lose his mind. And we head out into Hartford and do whatever someone does on a Sunday night in Hartford. I don't really know, but, you know.
Not a lot, I don't think. you know, you got to just be careful out there, man, in Hartford. All right. So we're going to be back on Tuesday to talk about Live Tracks Volume 4. I'm excited to just keep this going, and we are going to have some guests coming up soon. So I just want everyone to know that we're going back in time a little bit. This will be our earliest show so far in terms of Live Tracks, and Volume 4 is from their home state, and there's some really kind of classic stuff in there. And so I'm looking forward to going back to 96 and listening to that show. So everyone should join us on Tuesday. If you're listening to the podcast version, please leave us a review and help us get this in front of more people. And, you know, we're going to see you guys soon. So thank you.
We'll see you guys next week. Yeah. Everyone have a good weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday. Thank you, RJ. This is great.
Thanks to everyone who watched. See you guys soon.
Osiris.